Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Welcome, everybody, to the Longhorn Republic, your source for Texas Longhorn news, sports, and opinions with a bit of snark built in. We are a podcast at Burn Orange Nation, and you can find more great Texas Longhorn content over at burnorangenation.com. If you like what we do, please leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts. It helps get the show out there. Share this with your friends wherever you found it, whether it was Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, anywhere where you find fine podcast content. You can find Kyle and myself. Connect with us on social media at Longhorn Pod on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, The Longhorn Republic, or shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. My name is Gerald Goodridge. I'm your host this week, like I am every week. And I'm joined by a man who is so ready to not face a purple team, Kyle Carpenter. Kyle, how are you?
If it's not Prince, I don't really understand why it would be purple. Like, I just, if it's not my guy from Minnesota Vikings territory making sumptuous guitar licks and soul ballads and retro pop, why is it purple? Just answer me that. What naturally occurring thing in the world that's good is purple? Think about it.
Grapes.
They are crimson or green.
Okay, I'll allow it. I just like grapes. I went through a stage in my single life where I didn't buy fruit because I was a lonely single guy, and then like I got married and I was like, let's buy fruit, and I'm like, grapes, let's buy grapes because grapes are great. But inflation's killing me on these grapes. They're so stinky. We're not here to talk about the best fruits. We're here to talk about the best college football game of the week and College Game Day back in Austin to hype up a matchup of two top teams. TCU is in a like win out, and you've got a shot at the playoff situation, sitting near the top of the CFP rankings. Texas has an opportunity to win out and make its way to Arlington for the first time in like 3 years ish, and just the second time since the game's been played in Arlington, would be a big deal. TCU has had a bit of a schlep, a bit of a uphill fight to get to undefeated at this point in the year. Went to the wire with Kansas, trailed Oklahoma State 24-7, trailed Kansas State 28-10, trailed West Virginia 14-7, and trailed Texas Tech just this last weekend 17-13 in the fourth quarter. So this is a matchup, Kyle, that terrifies me because it's a team in Texas that struggles to score in the second half, whereas TCU struggles to score in the first half. And then it flips for the second half, where TCU lights up the second half of games, and Texas can't seem to score more than a field goal in the second half of most contests. And so there is a lot to talk about, Kyle, but I'm just going to be honest. That has been costing me sleep this week.
Yeah, they're like the upside-down version of Texas. Like, they have one really good half and one bad half. It's just they've been able to knock the other team's quarterback out in the beginning of the other half, so they can win it. I mean, again, Texas could have finished off any of their opponents, any of their losses could have easily been wins. We know that. TCU just made it happen. They're close ones. They won, right? That's the difference. They each pick a half. TCU's just been able to finish it out because, again, they do the smart thing where they knock the other quarterback out in the first half. I say that half kiddingly. But, yeah, I mean, there's a lot to fear here, knowing that each of these teams has a reputation. For Texas, it's to fold, and for TCU, it's to strengthen as the game goes on. Can they break that? There is also the thing that, that Texas, you know, is significantly better at home. Like, most of their struggles have been on the road, especially in the second half. So can a little home cooking, sleeping in your own bed, can that do enough for Texas to get up enough, or can Texas rewrite it, right? Can this be where they play four complete quarters, or even a gritty, you know, fist fight, blood spitting all the way to the end, where they have to pull something out in the second half, where they can rewrite the narrative, right? End it, put it to bed for once and for all, let there be no doubt after the second half. But that's a pretty big ask, because we have 2 years of data at this point, and we know what this team is for whatever reason. If they try this, the typical playbook of get up early with great play calling, foot on the gas pedal, and then just kind of ease off it, it's going to bite them, and it will be, we will be the eighth victim to TCU, whatever predator, whatever snake, whatever animal it is that lures its prey in and into sleep by playing dumb and playing dead the first half, and then just absolutely strangling you in the second. We will be the latest if we fall into that trap.
What number does Texas have to be leading by at halftime for you to feel comfortable, and why is it 63?
Yeah, I mean, like honestly, if it's not in the 40s, like realistically, legitimately, like if they're up 31-7, if they're 35-10, I don't necessarily feel good about that. We saw last week, like, they're up 21. We've seen 28 points. We've seen the OU game. We've seen big things, right? Like, I legitimately think it's probably in the 40s. and that's, like, it's crazy. Like, a 35-0 halftime lead, I'm still absolutely shaking in my boots. Like, I'm not even kidding. That will be terrifying. The halftime 15 minutes will be the longest of my life.
I'm telling you, I tweeted it out during the game that, like, the dumbest thing, of all the dumb things about being a Texas fan currently, like, not feeling comfortable with a double-digit halftime lead is the dumbest thing in the world. Like, that should be, like, bourbon and chill time. But it's like, no, I've got to lean forward and have my game face on for the entirety of the second half because I don't trust y'all people. This is not your grandfather's TCU team, Kyle. The TCU offense, under the guise of little brother Riley, we'll call him little brother Riley for our purposes, new offensive coordinator, under the guise of a man they stole from the other side of the DFW Metroplex, but averaging 43 points a game, 7.36 yards per play, helmed by Max Thuggin Duggan, completing 65, almost 66% of his passes, 2,400 yards, 24 TDs, and just two interceptions. Also, 424 sack-adjusted rushing yards and four touchdowns. Like, big numbers from a kid, and I've said this, and this is whatever, but like, if Max Duggan was the University of Texas quarterback with these numbers and Texas was 9-0, there would be no Heisman conversation. It'd be Max Duggan and everybody else.
Yeah, I mean, I think the one thing is, right, like, we like a Heisman that is on a number one team. We like a Heisman that their team dominates. And TCU has not been able to dominate anyone else because of that aforementioned strategy of just only playing two of the four quarters, or I guess overtime in the case of when they beat Oklahoma State. But, yeah, like, they didn't even dominate Colorado, who's one of the worst teams in the country, and who they opened with. It was a comfortable win, but it wasn't, you know, anything crazy. They beat Tarleton, fine. SMU, their last out-of-conference game, was close. It was very close. OU, it looked like, wow, that's a win. But, you know, we've seen what OU is this year, which, again, we shouldn't miss any opportunity to talk about the fact that what OU is this year is not good, and that's beautiful, and we all love that. Kansas, like, again, the hurt quarterback, it's a 7-point game. Even with that, Oklahoma State was two overtimes. Kansas State was, you know, pretty close to a one-score game. They backdoor covered against West Virginia. That was really a 3-point game up until the very end. Tech ended up being a 10-point game. They're winning these games, but they're winning them close. And so, yes, Duggan looks great, and there's no doubt that he's putting up incredible numbers. The reason he's not in the Heisman conversation, not that it's correct, is because it's not the flash to the highlight of Max Duggan making a play, and then you see a 63-7 score for TCU, and you say, wow, these guys are really something. They haven't really had that yet, right? It's been that Max Duggan gets to play four quarters, even if he only chooses to play two of them, against every team. They need every yard. They need every touchdown. And so, you know, it's I don't know if it's fair or it's right, but I think that's what's going on here.
He's good. And the other thing about Max Duggan is that he always seems to save his best games for Texas. Like, that is I don't know what it is, but when he sees that burnt orange Longhorn, that man just goes off. And so one of the questions, one of the curiosities I have about this game is the health of Quentin Johnston. And we're still waiting to see what he has going on for that. He only played one play against Texas Tech, left the game against West Virginia, but still, even in spite of leaving the last two games early, is still the head and shoulders receiving leader for the Horned Frogs. 42 receptions, 650 yards. He actually didn't crack 50 until week 5 and then went off for 206 against Kansas and then 180 against OSU. So it's been a relatively kind of feast or famine with him. It's either like 70 yards or 200 yards. And so hopefully maybe it's a famine week for him. We'll see what Texas does. But picking up the slack, Tay Barber, 23 receptions, 450 yards, 3 scores. Darius Davis, 28 for 385 and 5. Savion Williams, 18, 279 and 3. And the name you're probably familiar with, Jared Wiley, 12 for 136 and 4 touchdowns. So a lot of different receivers been on the receiving end of Duggan touchdowns. And this might be a weird game for that because it's currently projected to be like chilly and rainy on Saturday. So, but as it stands right now, looking at it, there are a lot of options that can and should scare you for Max Duggan on that pass attack.
Yeah, if Quentin Johns is playing, playing healthy, I'm very scared, right? Like, if a famine is 70 yards, you know, against Texas, that means a famine's 130, because these teams will get up for Texas, but Tay Barber's not bad. He's quite a good receiver. Darius Davis has done some nice things this year. Jared Wiley, you and I were two of his biggest advocates for the potential and upside that he had just with his size as he was growing into the kind of pass-catching, pass-blocking, run-blocking kind of requirements of a tight end that he didn't necessarily have as a former quarterback. Just the upside there. And you've seen it this year. He doesn't have a bunch of catches, but when he gets near the red zone, his size, they take advantage of, they scheme up for, and he's at 4 touchdowns. So a lot of things happen, and that's not even talking about their backs or the legs of Duggan. So they can attack you a bunch of different ways with a bunch of weapons. Duggan has not turned the ball over a ton as far as interceptions through the air. They have given up some sacks. I almost wonder if you know, in this game, bring the pressure a little bit. Like you just say, look, the receivers are pretty good, and they're probably, like, TCU is an offense that gets explosive plays. Like, they're probably going to break at least one. Like, they'll do it. Do we sell out and try to get the, you know, pressure on the quarterback, tip balls at the line, you know, get him scrambling a bit, even though he's dangerous with his legs, but just where he can't, you know, sit back and tear us apart, as even mediocre quarterbacks have done. He's better than a mediocre quarterback. We know that. Is this the week where you just see quite a bit of pressure coming? In the beginning of the season, that was those little cornerback blitzes. We haven't seen those quite as much. Do we see pressure from the linebackers? We saw DeMonte Tucker-Dorson struggle a little bit with getting pressure and then missing, just having a guy and him just slipping out from his hands. Byron Murphy also had one that should have been a sack where Martinez made a Houdini play to get out. Like, are they able to dial up pressure? Can they get pressure with the four-man front? Great, do that all game. That's fantastic if that's going to work. But do they dial pressure as well and just say, look, we're gonna trust Watts on Quentin Johnson, like our big cornerback who's been pretty lights out. We're gonna trust that Jamison can keep up with Tay Barber step for step, and he wants another interception to add to his tally, and he's been pretty good, especially in the first half of the season. Does he have you know, can he get back to that? Because this is a good game with all eyes on you to raise that draft stock again. And, you know, Jamison is certainly thinking about that. So Cook only played one play last week, but, you know, he's a guy who is playing hurt and has a lot of experience. Does he get back and be more available in this one and help us out there? We'll see. But, I almost wonder if you just leave their receivers where they are, hope you win your matchups as much as you can, and try to, you know, try to get the ball out of his hands in other ways.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we talked about it in the recap show, but part of Pete Kwiatkowski's strategy has really been to, like, take away what your opponent wants to do. And for what it's worth, TCU has kind of become a little bit more pass heavy than they have in the past. Like, that's just who they are, right? If you look at it, their leading rusher has 153 carries. Max Duggan has 244 attempts. Now you throw in DeMarcado and it's a little bit closer. It's like, you know, 204 versus 244, but still the ratio has shifted pass significantly. And so, I wonder what that looks like. And again, Max Duggan is one of those quarterbacks that can beat you with his feet, like I said. So is it going to be a man coverage situation and really just keep them from making those big chunk plays you keep in front of you? Or are you going to try to man it up and let your athletes see if they can out-athlete some of these other guys? But you do also have to account for, I mentioned Kendre Miller in there. For the second week in a row, Texas is facing the number two running back in the Big 12. 1099, he passed Deuce Vaughn with a big performance, plus Deuce didn't have a big performance. So again, there is a legitimate run threat. No, behind him, a guy who's averaging 5.6 yards per carry in Amari DeMarcado.
Yeah, I mean, they're a really good running. Like, Texas has two running backs on their schedule with Baylor's kind of freshman standout who's coming into his own, who are very good, especially are getting stronger as the season goes on from where we thought they were at the beginning of the season to where they've come in. I think Kendre Miller is very good. Like, I think he's legitimately a really dangerous running back. He a lot of his stuff, they have big home run plays, like big explosive plays that Dykes has been able to scheme up and get that offense to execute. The thing that I'll be watching in this one, because whether it's the pass, whether it's the run, whether it's Duggan getting out with his legs in the run, this is a team that likes the explosive play, that lives on the home run. They win games on literally the two or three home run plays. That's the difference in their wins. That's what wins them the game. Texas is number two in the Big 12 in yards per play allowed, right? They're giving up just a shade over 5.05. And only Iowa State and Kansas State, who each have 14, have allowed fewer red zone touchdowns than UT with 16. So can UT limit the big plays, right? Iowa State hasn't played TCU yet either. So, you know, TCU has done this against good defenses because they played Kansas State, but not necessarily great defenses. Oklahoma has struggled this year. Kansas is never a good defensive unit. Oklahoma State's not good at all. And so they have Texas, Baylor, Iowa State remaining. They have a tough defensive schedule. So can Texas start the trend of TCU has to play some good defenses who are going to hopefully be able to limit those big plays? And again, when you look at Iowa State and Texas, they've been pretty good at bend, don't break football and not giving up the touchdown. You saw Texas do it against Kansas State. Like, if you go for it on fourth down, Texas made a big stop. If you know, you get there and you say, all right, I'll settle, I'll take the field goal, that's a win for Texas. So can Texas bend but not break? Can they give up, you know, chunk plays? Like, there was a Malik Knowles 62-yard catch, I think, in the last game, but I think they got a field goal on that drive. Like, or actually, that may have been the drive when they had the fourth down stop in the red zone. Like, can they stop the big play from becoming the home run play and then shore up and hold them to a field goal or make them go for it on fourth and maybe get a stop? Like, can Texas bend not break, and can Texas continue to keep things in front of them against a TCU team that doesn't? It doesn't solve everything. We know what that leaves. It leaves passes over the middle where teams extend for drives. We see that. We know that. It can also be painful, but there is a clear philosophy here, and the ability that Texas has to stop the run up the middle with their linemen and how locked in their two linebackers, who are both all conference level so far this year and maybe more, have been playing. I think they could take away the run, and so can Texas, to go back to it, win the matchups with their secondary on the receivers and the backs coming out of the backfield, whoever it is, the pass catchers for TCU?
Yeah, and like I said, thankfully there's a little bit of a adverse weather forecast, and so that generally doesn't benefit the passing team. Now, thankfully, Texas brings a Bijan Robinson to the table, right? They bring a Bijan to the gunfight, and so I think in my in my world and in my estimation, and this is, I've never said this, I think about a Texas team, especially under Steve Sarkisian, if this becomes a ground and pound situation, a grinded out game, much like we saw last year against TCU, I'm going to take the team with Bijan. I'm not saying that's going to be the situation. I'm not saying that that's, but like generally speaking, when that is the mode of the game, I'm going to take the guy that could take a one inch hole and turn it into 6 points in that situation. It's like that to me is an equalizer for Texas, a little bit for the weather, but this is an explosive TCU offense like we haven't seen in a very long time. And it's just, for lack of a better term, it's scary.
With that being a scary offense, with them doing that, is this the time that Quinn Ewers steps up and says, oh, this guy is sneaking into the Heisman conversation? Do you forget who I am back at home? You know, can it be the type of thing where it's a quarterback battle? We think it's going to be a running back battle. It's going to be a Bijan show. Will this end up being? I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see if Max Duggan isn't he's been the top passer in every game he's played this season. Besides the first one in Colorado where he was not starting, right? He's their backup in theory. I think Chandler Morris started the first game of the season. But since then, Duggan has been the top passer for either team, his or the opponent's team, in every game this season. So can he do that again? And if he does, can Texas be the first team to win against them when Duggan is the top passer? It'd be very, very curious to watch that.
I just want to warn all the people that are saying that 21 or 27, 22-ish points is too many. You might want to skip Saturday. That's all I'm going to say about that.
Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.
In spite of the offensive explosion from them, in spite of the offensive penchant they've shown, this is still TCU, allowing 26.9 points per game, 5.6 yards per play. Both of those are doing quite a bit for them. Now, those averages are floated by like a 59-17 win over Tarleton or a 38-13 win over Colorado that got a coach fired, right? Like but they give up points, Kyle. You know, over the last, we'll just say it like over the last five for them, it's been 31, 40, 28, 31, 24. And so, like, can Texas get one or two stops? Again, the offense reward them, right? It's a defense led by its linebackers, Johnny Hodges, Jamoy Hodge, and D. Williams are 1, 2, and 4 on the tackle list, with Hodges with 55, Hodge with 53, and D. Winters with 43. Winters leads them in tackles for loss and sacks with 9.5 and 6.5 respectively. And again, for me, the defense has been good about coming out of the locker room at halftime and getting a stop, right? PK and his staff have been doing a really good job of scheming and playing chess at halftime, whereas the offense has been out-schemed and out-scripted in basically every game we've seen this year. And so can the defense, against probably the most potent offense they're going to see for the rest of the year, if not all year, looking backwards, like, can the defense do that again?
Gerald, I will give you an acronym, and you tell me if you understand my answer to that question. Texas is going to play gap football. That's an acronym. Do you know what I'm saying when I say gap football?
So not like actual, like not like actual gaps like on the line?
No, I am too cheeky for that.
I got nothing.
Gary Allen Patterson. Gary Patterson, we're going to play gap football. We are going to play. I have said before that I think spite is the strongest human emotion. I think many of our greatest feats have been because of spite, a lover scorned, you fired me, I'll show you. You know, it is an intense and incredible motivator of humans. Not always the most healthy, but it is intense and it is powerful. And Gary Patterson is a petty man. We know that Gary Patterson used spite to get up for the Texas game every year. That was a big thing for him. That was pretty much what he anchored his season around. He never hid that. He admitted that. He said that. Like, SMU was, I guess, kind of a rival, and especially later in the career, yeah, we pay some attention to them. But the biggest game on their schedule was Texas. Everything that he did was about beating Texas. He recruited against Texas. Everything that he did was in comparison to Texas. He hated us. He had good success because he really schemed to beat us. I can only imagine that from the day Gary Patterson was fired, he started planning about how he would beat TCU the next year. Then he was hired at Texas, so he then had a place to put that in practice. Like, some people said, well, Patterson had the scheme for the Alabama offense. Yeah, sure. I'm sure he thought about Alabama. But you know, even if that was his assignment, at night, he was going home and sketching up TCU plays. He wants to beat them so badly. He wants to embarrass Max Duggan. He wants to embarrass Sonny Dykes. He wants to embarrass their athletic director. He wants to embarrass the kid who poses next to his statue out in front of the stadium so badly. Anything that has to do, and he loves the boosters over there. Whatever. He's supposedly a nice man outside off the football, but not this week. He is absolutely going to be like a horned frog shooting blood out of his eyes to win this game. Like, he is the secret weapon, honestly. Like, how do you stop Max Duggan and that good running back and a running game and some talented weapon? Well, Gary Patterson. Like, again, Pete Kwiatkowski is our defensive coordinator. He's going to, you know, have the bones of this. But the freestyle, the little jazz freestyle, the Charlie Bird Parker of this game is going to be Gary Patterson. He's going to be playing the beautiful notes in between PK's steady bass line. Like, this is Gary Patterson's time to shine, and I'm honestly pretty excited.
We have been very openly anti, like, when the defense plays good, air quotes, to people's expectations, it's Patterson. When the defense plays bad, air quotes, according to people's expectations, it's been PK. I would not be surprised if Gary Patterson hasn't talked about a game plan until this week, right? Like, whatever his, he has, right? But, like, whatever his responsibilities are, he has probably ratcheted them up. So, yeah, so we ended up back on the defense because, well, the defense, let's just be honest, has been the more consistent unit, we'll say, from week to week. We got to talk about the Texas offense. Again, this is going to be, for me, like, can the inside of the Texas offensive line get to the next level, put a body on a linebacker, and create some space for Bijan Robinson, right? And it's not, can they hold up at the point of attack in order to do that? Can they convert on their double teams and use that as a double team off to the second level to give Bijan some space? That is the thing and the question that I think I have for this Texas offense. And it seems like the offensive line is improving, right? But even in the last game, we talked, and I feel like I jinxed it, we talked about how good Christian Jones had been up until that point. Like, the Kansas State game was not a good night for Christian Jones. How does he rebound? How does a guy like Hayden Connor, who made himself on a SportsCenter highlight by running out in front of Bijan like a massive ginger freight train, space shuttle? He's a space guy. So out in front, rocketing in front of Bijan like the space shuttle. There we go. Like, how do those guys hold up this week, and can they create enough space? And again, this might be a grinder game based upon what the weather is. Like, can they hold up? Can they create enough space? Can Texas grind this one out? And I would even love to see Texas do that if the weather's nice and limit TCU's possessions.
Yeah, absolutely. I think winning the turnover battle will be huge. I mean, they have a cornerback who has been a little bit down by his own standards, but Travius Hodges Tomlinson, who obviously cousin of LaDainian Tomlinson, but great player in his own right. If he would have gone last year, there was some first round buzz about him as a draft pick last year, came back this year. There's guys who want to make their name on college game day and the big show that'll have lots of eyes. You know, you put a ball, I bet he will probably be matched up against Worthy. You put a ball underneath or, you know, just in the wrong spot, miscommunication, and he might just pounce on it. I'm very curious. When you were talking about Hayden Connor, I was thinking back to the Houston Astros parade and how excited my wife was to see Orbit. Maybe that's the nickname. The Astros mascot is Orbit, and he's kind of a sweet but also giant green alien thing, which, you know, we'll workshop it. But I have a feeling this could be a Sanders-Whittington game when you're passing it, you know, 8 to 12 in the middle, in complimentary routes, find the guy who finds the soft zone, and hit him, take the easy stuff to get it going versus, you know, have to hit. I know we talked in our last pod about we need it. We need to add that to the offense. But this, you know, this game, I like the idea of keeping the ball. Maybe let your defense win it for you by forcing mistakes on their end, but keep the ball. Like, don't put your defense in bad spots. Win special teams. Do all those other things. But if you win the turnover battle at home and the crowd behind you, it's going to be raucous. It's going to be a big thing. When they're on offense, it's going to be loud. Hopefully when we're on offense, it'll be nice and quiet and easy until we're cheering. But yeah, win that turnover battle. Keep the ball. Let Ewers win. Don't make him go win it for you. You know what I mean? Let him make the winning throws. Help him scheme open the tight ends. You know, maybe move that pocket with a little bootleg. We saw that to some success. Maybe we see that come back a little bit here. It seems like every week there's a little bit of a motion wrinkle. Hopefully we can, you know, play on that to you know, get guys wide open. I just make it easy on Quinn, who's had a you know, rough couple weeks here. His last 2 weeks has not been where he expects himself to be or anyone expects him to be. So make it easy, lean on five, you know, take your shots where you get them, play action into them, whatever it is, but don't put him in a position to where his tendencies, we know, are to be the gunslinger.
Take it over the middle, run mesh, take it underneath, run some levels, run a sprint out to levels, throw it to the flats to Bijan, throw it to Keelan in space, run a wide receiver screen, do anything to get that kid in rhythm, and it seems to work out. So Kyle, it is approximately 30-ish minutes into our preview, so it feels like it's time. It's time. Currently, tied-ish, we'll call it tied-ish, 11-11 in our Podstradamus picks. Kyle, what is your first Podstradamus pick of the final six of the year?
I think Bijan going for the second week against the number two running back in the Big 12. I think Bijan will show out. Last week, the running game won the ground battle by 100 yards. Again, even with a mobile quarterback and more running options, yada, yada. I think for the second week in a row, Texas will not only win the running game, you know, the ground battle, but I think they will win it by more than 35 yards. This will be a nice, healthy, comfortable. They'll win on the ground, and they'll win probably more than that, but at least 35.
That feels fair. So, like I said, the weather's going to be crappy, so it very limits what we could go with for our Podstradamus predictions. But we mentioned it in the Tuesday show that Jatavion Sanders is about 188 yards away from setting the single season record for a tight end. And I think Jatavion Sanders is going to have 70 receiving yards in this game.
I like it. I like it going right out there. That's a good, healthy number. I think I like that. If he gets greater than 69, I think it's going to be a nice day for everybody on the offense. Gerald, on the defensive side of the ball, I like what we were just talking about. Again, the combination of between Gary Patterson revenge and needing to win the turnover battle, have more possessions, have more chances for the, you know, two dangerous offenses. Let's make it the Texas offense that has the ball more. So I think Texas wins the turnover battle.
That's a bold one. TCU has not lost the turnover battle yet this year. I appreciate.
They haven't lost a game yet this year, Gerald. We're talking about winning strategies here.
This one's going to be for all of the folks that I told to stop listening to the podcast earlier because it's going to be a high-scoring game. But I think Texas holds TCU to less than 50% on third down conversions. They have been a shockingly not great third down team this year.
I like it, Gerald. I like it. 50%?
Yeah, less than 50%. So if they go for 50%, I lose. But less than 50%.
I like how you set the Vegas line there. It's important. Okay. Yeah,
I appreciate it. So that's it for the TCU preview. We'll be back on Saturday with our post-game live stream. You can catch it on Twitter and Facebook. And we'll be back on Tuesday with our full breakdown.
All right, let's take it now into the burnt orange lenses. We take a look at the world through some burnt orange specs. And Gerald, we have to start with one that we didn't get to formally give it its shine on Monday as we were recording. So we said maybe we'd forget. We're not going to forget because it was a win, and we blessed the mood. Minister of Culture wasn't there, but the Longhorns certainly were, especially in the you know stretches of the end of the first half and the last half of the second half, the fourth quarter, if you will. They showed up and showed out and did what they needed to do and opened the Moody Center with a win. Would have been a very embarrassing look back in the annals if it was not. 72-57 over the University of Texas, but El Paso Miners.
Yeah, Texas started slow, and you and I were kind of half watching it because we were recording at the time. But Texas like started slow and then cracked off a big run. But I think like the thing that was impressive the most to me was like, I don't know if Texas has like, and this is not a shot at like Marcus Carr and the rest of the crew from last year, but like it just like having Tyrese Hunter and Sir Jabari Rice back there just feels different. It feels like there's an actual point guard back there. And again, Marcus Carr was playing out his position last year. I think even he would admit that. And so like those two guys back there, you know, they are the real deal. They are legit. Like adding Tyrese Hunter over the offseason was a massive, massive pickup. And it hurt Iowa State, so I'm not mad about it at all. But like that to me was the biggest differentiator for Texas was seeing the guard play looks legit. Like it looks like an actual like legit set of guards that can win you some games.
I will say Tyrese Hunter is absolutely trying to be a villain, and I love it. It was a UT culture package they did, and one of the pieces, and they interviewed Hunter, and he basically said, "Yeah, I've never bonded with a team this fast or been this close to my teammates." Basically, just like, "Hey, all of you who are still there in Ames, here's a big middle finger." But yeah, he was great. I mean, he shot well, he scored efficiently, he looked to attack, and I actually, you know, the biggest thing we talked about in our preview and watching in this game as we came in is what that offense would look like with Carr and Hunter and probably Rice. You know, there's a three guard look, but especially Carr and Hunter as your two guards, your two ball handlers, and can they be interchangeable? And there was a lot of times that Hunter both led the point of the spear on defense and was phenomenal on the defensive end, by the way. I think advanced analytics had him graded out as our third best defender because Gavin Perriman came in for 1 minute and got two steals, so he was off the charts analytically. And Christian Bishop in limited time was also very good. But if people who played significant minutes, Tyrese Hunter was by far our best graded defender. He and Carr both jumped some passing lanes for steals, but Hunter also just, you know, stopped their ball handler many times. Look good, but anyways, the offense, I thought Hunter could get to the rim. Carr, you know, with a kick was doing what we always wanted to see him do, which was attack aggressively, right? Get to the paint. What I actually like from Marcus Carr, though, he didn't shoot particularly well, 2 for 8, he got to the line a bunch, 8 for 10 from the line. He dished 6 assists. He drove to pass, which is what we wanted from him last year. We saw from him a little bit in the tournament last year and wondered if that could be consistent with him not being the primary ball handler. Would he still look to facilitate and then, you know, allow that to you know, give him the space to get his later in the game or whatever? To his credit, Carr looked more than willing. He certainly kept the ball a lot and drew those fouls and got in the paint and got the easy ones, which I think he's going to do all year. But the fact that he had multiple plays where he drove and then kicked to a big man who was wide open underneath for an easy flush, a couple dunks off of it, I really like to see. I think that's going to be a really good two-headed monster, which, you know, there will be games where it's Hunter's game, and this felt like it. There will be games where it's Carr's game, and you know, probably a lot of games where it's both.
I'm so excited to see Chris Beard slow down an offense that looks so good in the transition. Like, that's my favorite thing I'm going to watch this season, is Chris Beard suck the life out of these kids who can run. And like, some of the best offensive possessions were where Texas was actually moving. Now, that being said, when they get behind and they need to do that, that's great that they can switch it on, but I'd much rather just see them like run a little bit more and be a little looser and be a little fluid. But that's not what we hired Chris Beard to do, apparently. But a win is a win.
Yeah, and just a couple other things. Dylan Mitchell didn't have a bunch in the second half, but he has good hands. That athleticism there. He's going to have some big games and some big highlights this year. I like a big man with good hands. We led 16-1, as Gerald alluded, in the fast break, but did fall in the second chance point 17-4. That's going to be something to watch. Big men. UTEP was a big team. Give UT problems. And
Gonzaga's bigger.
Yes. And I will say, though, Dylan Disu came on very well in the second half. He was our leading scorer and rebounder. He had 10 points. He had three straight possessions where he had six of his points on consecutive possessions. He came up big, had two blocks in the game, two goaltendings, which at least one of them was absolutely bogus. You could argue maybe both of them were. He could have had four blocks in this game. So he did look like our interior presence. You know, he'll have to kind of work just a smidge on that timing if they're going to be calling that. But he was. But after him, who else is there, right? Who's our second when he's not in? What's our interior look like? Who's able to rebound? You know, Hunter and Sir Jabari Rice were our best rebounders. Our top scorers and rebounders were all transfer guards in this game. So we'll see how that plays out. But if you're thinking, woe is me, we should have beat them by 40 points because some people are negative about everything, just know there were a couple close ones. TCU, preseason darling, everyone's favorite. Gerald was keeping me updated as we were recording on this game, too. Barely escaped preseason number 361, Arkansas Pine Bluff. And Gerald, did OU win their opener?
They did not. They were the only men's and women's team playing on opening night that lost.
Yeah, 16-1, and the one was OU. Ah, it's beautiful. And OU's stadium was like 1/10 filled. So, you know, just remember, like, they are in the worst of it right now in their athletic department until softball season, of course. Enjoy us being good at things and them not being good at things. Also, Florida State lost to a hat, 83-74 to Stetson. So, and that was also at home. So, again, just enjoy getting the home opener win and look to improve. But a big one on coming up with first Houston Christian and then Gonzaga coming to the mood. A big one, Gerald, that you were all over. Some of our buddies in the recruiting trail have been dropping breadcrumbs on this for a minute, but huge news for the University of Texas in a crazy kind of recruiting week after it's been quiet on the Western front for a few weeks. Colton Vasek officially flips from that same woeful OU to the University of Texas.
Big deal. Big stinking deal. One, like, not just a decommit and then a commit later, like a straight up flip, which feels absolutely great. Top 20 edge rusher in the country, top 150 kid. I think my favorite part about this whole recruitment is the fact that he committed to OU over the summer, and then he was an official visitor for OU at the Red River game. And he said, like, this is going to be my first time going to cheer against Texas. And then he went and tried to cheer against Texas when OU got the absolute living dog beat out of them. It felt so good. Like, this clearly felt like it was kind of a kick in the pants when it happened that he committed to OU, but a lot of people in the know were like, just keep watching it. And come to find out, the kid could not resist the allure of the team that he's been watching his entire life.
Yeah, his dad played at Texas in the 90s, also at a defensive end. He's coached at Duncanville and Westlake most recently, where Vasek played. I will say, with that Westlake team, a high school offensive coordinator in the Austin area who played against said Westlake told me that when we got Ethan Burke, he said, you know, I thought as a sophomore, Vasek looked better than Burke did as a senior. And that's not a knock on Burke, who we always knew. He was more of a project kind of player, but it just tells you that even as a sophomore in high school, he was dominating, you know, around other D1 guys. Vasek stood out against, D1 talent on the offense. He stood out. So just a really good player who has the frame, has the, you know, when you think about what a defensive end recruit looks like, it's basically this frame that's, you know, 6'6"-ish, maybe a hair shy, 230 of just pure, like, build, ready to be built upon frame with a college strength and conditioning program. So he could really blossom into something there. It looks like, you know, a great pickup for Texas. Gerald, do you want to just quickly, I mean, we enjoyed it. We don't always go deep into the recruiting scuttle, but there were some, since this is Burn Orange Lenses and we can talk about other schools in this section, there were some other slightly relevant bits of information that floated around the greater Burn Orange internet, mainly Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday timeframe.
Yeah, I mean, keep an eye out on who's visiting this weekend. You know, there's a certain five-star linebacker that formerly committed to those inbreds in College Station that is no longer committed to them and is going to be in town this weekend along with several other priority recruits, a couple of other Westlake kids, potentially. One of them for sure will be there. One of them might be there. Just a big deal for Texas. It's going to be this weekend could really set up well because signing day is in a month. So be excited for that.
Texas currently sitting at the number 3 class. Number 2 looking like it's right in sights. You know, who knows? But I'll take that. I'll take a top 3 class no matter where they get. I just say,
they got a shot at 2. One's going to be hard.
Yeah, yeah. Bama's real good at this this game. But I won't say any names until things are official, of course. But just say, you know, the Aggies, they're real mad. You know, that annoying, all these things going wrong. And then on top of it all, you step in an anthill and have bites all the way up your leg. You know, read between. That's not even very, very subtle. Between the lines there, if you will. All right. So we have guys coming to the 40 acres. We talked in our preview about guys on the 40 acres. Let's talk about the alums here, Longhorn. NFL Longhorns, Gerald, who you got as your NFL Longhorn of the week?
You know who it's going to be. Cameron Dicker, the kicker. His teammates didn't even know his name. There's a video floating around of his teammates mic'd up asking, what's our kicker's name? The man goes around the country like a roving gunslinger, righting the wrongs and saving the teams. Two different teams, two different game winners. Like, somebody just realized that this kid needs to be on your squad and keep him around.
Ah, it's beautiful. I hope they don't. I hope literally he just sits in the I don't know, either Chicago, DFW, you know, some centrally located, very busy hub airport, so that he can get to any, just waiting for a call Sunday morning to which game he needs to show up to in which NFL city and kick game winners. Because all he does in his two career games is kick game winners. It's not a surprising stat, but it is a true stat that he's the first kicker in NFL history to kick 2 game-winning field goals in the final 2 minutes of regulation in each of his first 2 NFL starts with 2 different teams. So it's just a ridiculous but true stat. My favorite part of the whole thing, though, was when they interviewed him and asked him what he was doing. He was planning to go to the Carrie Underwood concert Wednesday in Austin when he got the call from his agent and, you know, had a brief change of plans, went to the airport. Freaking love this kid, and it's awesome. That's a great pick, Gerald. I think I'm going to go with mine, though. I love that Dylan Schooler just continues to be a special teams stud on the New England Patriots, recovering a block punt. I like old consistent. Our guy Jordan Hicks, you know, hard to say he's old, but he's been around for a long time. 12 tackles, 10 of them solo, 2 pass deflections, just doing that thing, right? Like, just being an NFL linebacker and being steady and consistent every week. I like that. Hope he has many, many more years, whether it's with the Vikings or whoever we're lucky enough to have him. But yeah, we'll give it to them. Sorry, Sam Mellinger. You don't have a coach. You don't have an offensive coordinator.
He has a coach. He's not qualified, but he has a coach.
Well, yes, that's true. And you know, a guy coaching on Sundays who's never coached on Saturdays or Sundays.
Has a losing record on Fridays.
As a high school coach, his only experience has a losing record on Fridays. So, good luck, Sam. Please stay healthy at least.
Be safe.
Around the country, we'll hit some of the college football bits. Big 12 TCU, of course, as we said, beat Tech last week. Baylor over OU 38-35. Kansas over Oklahoma State 37-16. Poor state of Oklahoma. It's tough. Bedlam, I heard most recently they're talking about an 8 a.m. kickoff on ESPN The Ocho. But
now Thursday.
Yeah, right. We'll see. They both fan bases absolutely think they're going to lose that game, and I love it. I couldn't be happier to see that. Iowa State got their first win, 31-14 over West Virginia. Anything stand out there at the Big 12 slate you want to comment on?
Why couldn't Oklahoma State have this meltdown 1 week earlier? Is a big question. TCU continues to get it done late. I've said it before and I'll say it again. The Black Friday game very likely is going to determine who goes to the Big 12 championship game. And I do not want to lose to Baylor. I just don't. So, like, we'll just – that'll have to – thankfully, it's in Austin.
You put that on the record in, like, a season preview. You've been banging that drum for a while, Gerald, so good on you. Yeah, good for Iowa State getting off the schneid. Oklahoma State, man. If we could have had a bye week on in between two road victories, if we, like, even with our own terrible play, if their meltdown could have started a quarter sooner, that would have been okay. But obviously, they aren't the Sooners in the state of Oklahoma. SEC football, Bama lost to LSU. Brian Kelly showing that Cajun moxie he's made of. Bourbon, hand grenades, and some recruit mama's gumbo, and just absolutely went for it. Ballsy call to go for two in overtime to beat Bama 32-31. And then Gerald, Florida Gators have had a rough year. It has not been the year they wanted in Billy Napier's near one. But you know what is a tonic for an upset tummy of a year? That's right, playing Texas A&M. It settles the soul. It soothes what ails you. 41-24 over the Aggies. Wonderful game to watch.
Are you calling the A&M offense the bananas, rice, and crackers diet? Is that what you're telling me, that this is all Texas A&M is? I've been praying for their downfall for a long time, and I'm glad it's happening. Like, it is a tire fire out there, and it seems like it might get worse.
They only have like 13 recruits. We probably just took their best one, as we alluded to earlier. Their other five star is pretty much gone. Maybe to Texas, we'll see. They haven't got a quarterback in that class, and Jimbo is supposed to be the master recruiter. He just paid $1 billion for the last class. All those guys are probably going to hit the portal. Guys that are still having the 3-week flu or something. How many weeks are left in the year? It's going to be a 6-week flu because people just don't want to play on that team. It's an absolute cesspool, and I couldn't be happier. I could not wish it on a better group of people. Absolute brats, Gerald. Bananas, rice. What is it? What's the
brat? Applesauce.
Applesauce.
Toast. I think
tater tots. Oh, toast. anyways, last relevant bit. Do you know what Tennessee, Clemson, Illinois, Oklahoma State, Syracuse, and Oregon State have in common, Gerald?
They all lost.
All the other orange teams in the country lost, but not Texas. By God. Not Texas. They bucked the trend of keeping all, even Miami, if you want to count them as an orange team, they lost. But not Texas. Texas bucked the trend once again, zigging where everyone else zags. Gerald, speaking of orange and white, the Fall World Series, three game came down to the wire. It was closer than the other Orange World Series, where, of course, the Houston Astros, in case you've forgotten, you didn't listen to the Monday podcast where I talked about being at the parade for said team. Houston Astros, my hometown, are the World Series champions, but also the returners for the University of Texas are the annual Fall World Series UT game. This year they did it newcomers versus returners, and it was a shock when newcomers won the first game 6-5. Returners didn't take to that too kindly. They won the second game 9-2 before absolutely blanking them 14-0 in the Fall World Series. It's like your kid, accidentally clocks you in the chin, and it's like, oh, okay, like, shouldn't do that to dad. I'm not gonna destroy you, but in this case, they did. They destroyed him. So I don't know. It's the young pups have a lot of talent, and there's a lot to look forward to. But it was good to see the old timers step again. Old timers in this case are like 21 to 22 year olds, but the old timers step up and secure things. Now we have them come together in the spring and do that to other teams. Some award season. Number 16 soccer placed 3 on the Big 12 tournament team. Missy Mo Byers and MJ Cox. You've certainly heard those three names a time or 12. Just wanted to point out, since we last reported on the team that knocked Texas out of that tournament, West Virginia, ultimately went on to beat TCU in double overtime and be the champs. It never feels better to lose to the team that won the championship, but at least you didn't lose to the team that lost in the championship, right? It's like, okay, it was their year. But all three of those will be, of course, playing in the postseason, and let them all go do well, right? That's not a bad thing. People have been sleeping on the Big 12 this year with some of these rankings and seedings. So let all three of those teams just dominate, folks. I'm not upset with that. And a couple more awards. Jalen Ford was named actually the Bronco Nagurski National Defensive Player of the Week. You knew he was Big 12, but since we last recorded, he became the fourth Longhorn to win that weekly award, and JT Sanders was named to the John Mackey Award semifinalist shortlist.
Much deserved. Jalen Ford probably has a legit shot at winning the Conference Player of the Year, so big ups to him. Exciting times.
Yeah, he's real, real good. He's got like game-ending or game-changing interceptions, two game-ending fumble recoveries, guys everywhere doing everything, and man, you love it. Like a guy who's outside. We talked about recruiting wins earlier, but a guy who's outside like the top 1,200 in that class. That's an evaluation and a development. You love to see it. JT Sanders, by the way, fourth among Power 5 tight ends with his 39 catches, five touchdowns, also fifth amongst all FBS tight ends. So, Gerald, let's take this thing home, a little bit of Godzillatron. What are you watching on your giant screen?
So, update, Family Night Pizza Night movie night this week was Disney's Hercules. Still slaps, super underrated. Mm. Like, of the Disney golden age of, like, the late 80s, you know, 90s. That's the one that I feel like doesn't get talked about enough, and, like, it's absolutely incredible. Go the Distance still gets me to this day. It's really awesome. I don't like scary movies or scary shows, but I will occasionally catch a wild hair right around Halloween time. And, like, the movie Constantine is not scary, but it's got scary elements, and having Peter Stormare play the devil is like perfect casting. It's incredible. So watch that. I'd seen it dozens of times, but I really love that movie. And then there's a new show on Netflix, and the name is going to be off-putting to some of you, and that's fine, because it's honestly, it's probably not a lot of your speed, but it's called The Bastard Son and the Devil Himself, and it's about a, like, warring, like, two warring factions of witches, and, like, the big bad has a son that he doesn't claim. The government keeps an eye on him because they're worried he's going to become, like, his dad. And so that's kind of the central plot, but they're doing a lot of interesting social commentary using this plot, because this kid is the only black character of his like age group, and so there's a lot of like talking about when do you internalize racism and it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy for you, and like those types of things. And it's just like, it's kind of this horror fantasy thing if you're into that sort of thing. It is bloody, it is gory, because they're like in a war, so like that's a thing. If that's not your deal, skip it. But I'm having a good time. It's fun. It's British people. It's British people doing magic. Like, it's hard to go wrong with that.
I like it. I like it. I don't always know all the ones you watch. I like that I started off strong with two out of three classics that I have actually seen. Maybe I'll have to check out your third pick there, Gerald. I watched a show that also has a slightly off-putting title. It's a weird thing to say out loud. I watched The Sex Lives of College Girls, but it is a show on HBO Max. My wife was watching and was like, hey, what? I want to watch it. Do you want to watch it with me? I was, sure, why not? Let's spend that quality time. It was great. I love the Mindy Project. It's created by Mindy Kaling. It's a fun cast of people you've probably never seen or heard of, but I also love that it tells, like, it's a good college show. You know, it's Degrassi one level up at college, right? It's a melodrama, but it's funny and it's interesting, and it's 2022. It's a good just college romp, right? Which there's a lot of those, but almost exclusively told from a male POV, so this was fun to see kind of with four roommates who, of course, you know, come from the opposite ends of the social spectrum and socioeconomic spectrum, and it's some interesting dynamics and things there. Different, they're all, you know, mostly different races, or at least from different parts of the country, and so there's a lot of you know, interesting dynamics that they dive into. Again, it's very 2022 topical. There's an athlete in the show and a Title IX investigation and a sexual harassment for a, you know, humor magazine. Like, really interesting things, topical. Like, you can see the news stories that actually happened that drove these, and then also just really kind of see how it would feel to be a college student in 2022. Newsflash, Gerald, as officially 10 years old, I think we've been old now for a decade. College seems way different than even when we were there a decade and some change ago. It was an interesting watch, interesting hang. Definitely laughed. Pretty good characters. Like, not a bad show at all. I was glad my wife recommended it. Wasn't really on my radar, but I think season one we finished. Season two, I'm sure, is coming out. I don't have a look at, but I'm pretty sure I heard it's coming for a season two. And then the other thing was Net Gains. This is part of being a capital J journalist of the capital M media. I got an advanced copy of Net Games, which is Net Gain's a really interesting book from Ryan O'Hanlon, who you may have heard of. He's been written for some big, you know, I think he wrote for The Ringer for a time. He's written for some big publications. He's one of America's, you know, handful of best soccer voices. And he somehow, like, he does a really good job of taking a topic that is could be dry and making it not dry at all, right? Like analytics, the analytic revolution in soccer. He uses some, you know, American lens on some things and then looks, of course, at like some national things. And it's not too nerdy and analytical, international, I should say, not too nerdy and analytical. It's also like well written and compelling storytelling. But again, if you like data and analytics, I feel like soccer was kind of the last frontier. Like the whole Moneyball revolution in sports happened in all the major American sports, and then soccer was like 5 or 10 years later, and they're really seeing it both at the national team level, at you know, the international various international leagues, and in America we're certainly seeing it, and it's in its infancy, but it's really a fascinating read. And again, if you like the any of the analytics revolution, if you like the Moneyball, if you're a Daryl Morey guy, if you like the Sloan Sports Conference, if you like soccer just generally, it helps explain where the game is going and honestly where it's going. So it was a really great read. Haven't finished 100% of it yet, but certainly will, because it's hard to put down. I just can't recommend it highly enough. So go out and check out Ryan O'Hanlon's Net Gains.
Definitely will have to. And that's all we've got for you this week. Kyle, where can the good folks find you on the internet?
Oh, you can follow me on Mastodon at, I'm kidding, you can follow me on Twitter at Kyle Carpenter. You can follow me on the Texas Pregamer Twitter account at Texas Pregamer.
Follow me on Twitter. I'm at GH Gertridge. Follow the show on Twitter at Longhorn Pod. You can also catch me doing a preview with our friend Melissa Treewasser over at Frogs Today. We did video. You can see what my face looks like. So if that's something that's down up your alley, check us out over there. Thank you so much for tuning in again this week. We'll be back on Saturday post-game for our live stream, and then obviously Tuesday with our full game recap. Thank you so much. And until next time, hook 'em.
Hook 'em. Texas never loses twice on game day in the same season.